You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Welcome into this edition of ESPN FC. Steve Nichols, Sebastian Salazar with you here in studio. Stevie, as always, plenty to get to in this show. Massive weekend coming up in La Liga. Spain's top four teams all playing. Julian Laurent, Sid Lowe will be by to help us preview that. But let's start with one match Friday in the Premier League. A six-goal, I won't call it a thriller, but a six-goal match. Newcastle beating Leicester City 4-2. Really, the final score flattering Leicester. This was 4-0 into the 80th minute. Callum Wilson with a brace for Newcastle as they pick up the 3 points. What it means for Leicester City, well, it could be devastating to their top four hopes. With a win, they would have been 8 points clear of fifth. Instead, just a 5-point gap between Leicester City and fifth place West Ham. For more, we welcome in Jan Agafjortov and Craig Burley. Craig, I'll start with you. What happened to Leicester today?
They played in that first half in particular like a side who thought it was just a formality to get this 3 points against a Newcastle team that have been poor this season. And yeah, they were without the experienced Johnny Evans, but that's really not an excuse. And, you know, it was some real shoddy defending. Probably the best we've seen of Newcastle as a threat all season, which doesn't say much for them. And even before they took the lead, I mean, San Maximum should have scored and Kasper Schmeichel had to make a great save. So yeah, Newcastle absolutely deserve to get their 4 goals. And quite frankly, Leicester, if you look at their fixtures, the last 3 games, they're horrendous. And they've got a cup final next week against Chelsea at Wembley that if they defend like that and play like that, this Chelsea side will take them apart. So all of a sudden, the worm has turned at the King Power Stadium and Mr. Rodgers is under a bit of pressure for the second season in a row and could blow it once again.
Stevie, you're Leicester City, everything to play for, top four right there. How does this happen?
Do you know, one of the major reasons is the fact that Johnny Evans didn't start this game. You know, I saw a thing online the other day. Is Johnny Evans underrated? Well, sometimes when you're not there, you're appreciated more. And we saw today what Johnny Evans does. He's the guy in the middle of the back three who organises the two wide of them, pushes them in, pulls them out, tells them what to do. And the same with the two midfielders. Johnny Evans is always talking to Tielemans and Ndidi about their positioning as well. So he's the guy that organises everything. And you saw today a team that was absolutely not organised. You saw two defensive midfielders would probably be the wrong name to call these two guys, Ndidi and Tielemans. But that's their main job. And they were absolutely non-existent today.
Craig mentioned Leicester City's run in Manchester United, Chelsea, Spurs, United and Chelsea away. Jan, if you're Leicester City, you know the history, you know what happened last year. Are they going to blow it?
Well, it's this kind of here we go again situation, and not only for the fans, this is also for the players and Brendan Rodgers. You know this is going to be turned into an embarrassing thing. You saw that Manchester United on fire at the moment, Chelsea, so and so, and then the home game at the end of the season against Spurs. And well, the only problem or the only thing that to think of is that at the end of the season, the so-called ECL game, that could be the toughest game. So you never know. But this one, one of those nights that you will think back, you needed 3 points against Newcastle, and 100% agree with Craig. You just felt that they had those 3 points in the pocket before the game. And we talk a lot about the misery of Leicester City, but also big respect to Newcastle. The way they took advantage of the counter-attacks today was impressive. And Steve Bruce have kind of taking the team to a safe mid-table position.
Craig, on this show, people have been very confident about Leicester City holding on to that spot. Is it time to start changing our opinion?
Yeah, I mean, last week I think I said I thought the top four was set in stone, but I didn't see this kind of performance coming. And I think if I was Liverpool now, I would feel relatively good about it because two games in hand, two wins for them. I know one of them is Man United, but the other fixtures are very winnable. That would put them 3 points behind. If I was David Moyes and I could get over the hurdle of Everton this weekend, then that's not going to be an easy hurdle for them. But it is it's the biggest game that they've got left. It's it's against the side highest up the league that they've got left. I would be feeling really good about that. And if I was looking at those fixtures as a Leicester player, I would be looking over my shoulder. So absolutely. And of course, Chelsea haven't got it nailed yet either, depending on what happens at the Etihad. So I think if I'm Liverpool and West Ham in particular, that's really spurring me on when I saw what happened to Leicester in this game, and potentially Chelsea might get beat. I mean, it's a big F, but they might get beat and City might be champions. And all of a sudden, we've got another two teams in this fight.
Yeah, the result really does open the door for everybody else trying to get into that top four. He said from a Liverpool perspective, you feel relatively good. Do you agree?
Not particularly.
You feel better than you did before this match?
I haven't changed my opinion one iota, but regardless. You know, I think we all forget that the game's actually to be played. Mm. We all look at the paper, and on paper, oh, Leicester's got three impossible games. They're not going to get any points. West Ham's got an easy running. They're going to get lots of points. Listen, in one of the craziest seasons ever where teams are struggling, or the majority are struggling, to win back-to-back, the most important thing right now is having the points. Mm. And Leicester have the points. It'll take, in my opinion, it'll take one win in these last three games for them to keep them safe. So you're better off with the points. Mm.
Leicester City in the top four for the moment. Chelsea as well. Of course, Chelsea's next match, Manchester City. Here's a look at their last meeting, the FA Cup semi-final back on April 17th. Of course, won by Chelsea in that match 1-0. Jan, how do you feel about Chelsea's top four chances looking ahead to Manchester City?
Well, it's a very interesting game. So there's a lot of talk about Manchester City securing their title, but it's also a big, big game for Chelsea. It turns a bit around now with Spurs and West Ham, and Liverpool can come close to them. Two teams that were very impressive at the Champions League semi-final. And there is so much into this game between Manchester City and Chelsea as well. It's a dress rehearsal for the Champions League final. Pep will try, how much of his magic should he put out? Will he get Aguero a great sending off in the last games of the season? So it's going to be interesting between two great managers, two managers who always have their mind games, their tactical games, and this is a big one. And but make no, Chelsea are not sure yet. They have to do it, and the great win against Real Madrid doesn't secure them Champions League place for next season, just secure them a Champions League final position. So it's going to be a heck of a game, this.
Craig, how do you think Pep Guardiola will approach this? As Jan mentioned, City can very well clinch the league, but this is a much bigger match for Chelsea.
Yeah, and there'll be no sentiment. And first and foremost, I agree with Jan in terms of, it's a shame, really, that two of the greatest players in this generation of English football are going to be seen off at some point with no fans, literally no fans. That was David Silva and Sergio Aguero, whose time at City is coming to an end. Two of the greatest imports to this game in the last 20 years. But look, in terms of the match, yes, there's a Premier League title on the line here, which City will either win at the weekend or eventually win. But he doesn't want this Chelsea side, and these City players don't want this Chelsea side and this Chelsea manager getting back-to-back wins against them, because that's going to throw a few gremlins in the heads of everyone at City in terms of the Champions League final that Jan mentioned. So we know Chelsea have been really well organised. We know what Tuchel's approach has been. He's been super successful so far. The players have taken it on board. And they deserve they are in the final. Now, if they can get back-to-back wins against City, what a shot in the arm that is for them going into the game on the 29th of May, wherever the hell it's going to be played. Who knows? And so that's a big thing for Chelsea. Not only that, but to try and cement a place in the top four. So there is a lot still to play for here. We know City are going to win the league at some point, but it's more than just that for them, and it's certainly more than just a win for Chelsea.
Without the team sheets, it's obviously, Stevie, a difficult question to answer, but looking ahead to Saturday, who do you think wins, City or Chelsea?
I'm going to go City. You know, when you play a side back to back so quickly, generally there's not a team that wins both games. And City will be absolutely all out to get Chelsea. And I wouldn't be shocked if it was the exact same team, maybe other than the goalkeeper, that lost that semi-final, because that would be great motivation. Plus, you know that Pep's going to rotate, so I'm going to go with City.
All right, then. Stevie's got City. Here's a look at the rest of the Premier League schedule for the weekend. Action starts bright and early Saturday morning. Leeds against Spurs.
Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They are the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at lectricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's lectricebikes.com.
Article from Sid Lowe up now over on ESPN.com on the continued, shall we say, fallout from Eden Hazard's post-game handshakes and hugs with his ex-teammates after Chelsea were eliminated by Real Madrid in the Champions League on Wednesday. The article's author, Sid Lowe, Julian Laurent, with us now. Sid, you kind of touched on this in the article, but do you get the sense that what's happened over the last couple days could in fact factor into Eden Hazard's exit from Real Madrid?
Yeah, of course it could. And obviously on one level, and this is one of the points that I pick up on in the article, the whole kind of noise around this has been absurd, that fundamentally he's being accused of having friends. And how dare he, the monster, he's got friends that he likes to see, that he hasn't seen for a while, that he's missed. But of course it feeds into the context of this, and the context is of 2 years of disappointment, the context is of the patience from the club running out a little bit, and with his continuous injuries and so on, and the fact that he hasn't really been able to contribute. And of course, the other part of the context is to look at the reasons in which certain elements of the media have felt the freedom to go and attack him, and to go and attack him with this viciousness, with this directness. And of course, that doesn't happen entirely in a vacuum. That partly happens because, as I say, there is a sense of freedom to do so. Real Madrid are in a position now, according to reports from one of the papers and a particular journalist who's very, very close indeed to Florentino Pérez, the president, they are now prepared to sell him. Now, of course, the problem is there's a big difference between being prepared to sell someone and wanting to sell someone, and then finding a club that will pay the money for that player. Now, Eden Hazard has been likened to Gareth Bale a lot over the last 3 or 4 days, and I think there are some parallels there, but a lot of it is absurd. But one area where you can liken him to Gareth Bale is, yeah, that's fine, but you want to sell him, who's going to pay for him? How much? Do you really think you're going to recover your investment on him? And of course, the answer to that is no, you're not.
Jules, that's just it. What do you think of what Sid is saying? Have we seen the last of Hazard at Real Madrid? And if so, where could he end up?
No, I agree with what everything Sid said. I think the one thing that could maybe save him, certainly on paper, is Zinedine Zidane. We know how much Zidane wanted him. And if Zidane remains as a Real Madrid manager, which is a long shot in itself, but I think if he stays at the club next season, he will maybe be able to protect Eden and keep him with him. If Zidane decides to leave or get sacked or whatever happens in the next, let's say, month or so, then I think it will become really, really hard for Eden to stay at the club, although he wants to stay. Again, this is his dream move really was to play for Real Madrid one day, and he's been an absolute nightmare. But I think I agree with Sid. One is, I think it's hard for him to stay anywhere. But two, where is he going to go? No one is going to pay 100 million euros anymore for someone like him, who's been so injury prone for the last 2 years, who's 30 now, who's on huge wages as well. At a time, PSG would have given pretty much everything to get Eden Hazard at the club. They tried many times and he always said no. But now they're not going to come back for him. And I don't know who will in the big clubs. And again, I think we could have another Gareth Bale.
Sid, you've said in your article that Zidane and Hazard are a package. Is that true?
Yeah, I'm really glad that Jules picked that point up. I think it's very significant, this. And I think it's significant when you look at... And look, I'm going to hold up my hands here and say there is a risk sometimes that we read too much between the lines. There is a risk sometimes that we see those kind of political divides as being permanent and not necessarily being in a state of flux, which of course they are. But Hazard is very much the player that Zidane has protected. Zidane has tried to put back in the team as often as possible. Zidane has defended at an institutional level. And up to a point, I think their futures are entwined. And Jules is quite right to suggest that one of the things that can protect Hazard is Zidane. The problem is that because it comes together, actually the disappointing performances from Hazard are held against Zidane to some extent from the club hierarchy. To some extent, there's a sense of Zidane having to almost resist some of the pressures from above to continually put Hazard into the team. And so I think that's a really quite significant question. I must confess, I'm not completely convinced that Zidane continues next year, and I think that does have a knock-on effect on Hazard's future. And equally, I think some of the pressures about Hazard's future have a knock-on effect in terms of Zidane's decision about his continuity or otherwise. And I think the two men are not necessarily a pack in the sense that they're completely undividable. I think it's possible that one stays at Madrid and the other doesn't. But I think their futures are very definitely connected.
Jules, correct me if I'm wrong. You were at the match on Wednesday. You were at Stamford Bridge. You must have seen this live from your spot on the sideline. When you were watching it unfold, did you know immediately that the reaction that we've seen over the last 48 hours is what we would get? Did it almost look like that to you right away?
100%. I mean, from where I was sat, and I was just going down to the pitch side again to do the flash interviews after the game, and I saw Kurt Zouma and Eden Hazard, and then Edouard Mendy was around as well. And when I saw Eden laughing, I was like, oh no, not now. And he should have known better. He's a professional. He's been in this game for long enough to know that the cameras would pick it up. And maybe he did it on purpose. I don't know. I certainly not have been told that. But I saw it straight away, and then I knew that he would escalate like this, because like Sid was saying, they needed a scapegoat, and it was so easy to pick on him and to attack him for that. I mean, I also had on Wednesday night someone calling me quite close to it, another saying, hey, you know, he also ran, he's the most, the Real Madrid player who ran the most against Chelsea. So he cares, you know, he really fought for it, and it didn't happen for him. But maybe try to change the agenda a little bit. I mean, okay, it's good, he ran a lot, and he was the Real Madrid player that ran a lot against Chelsea. But what he did at the end was far too much serious to just to try to compensate with the fact that he ran more than anybody else on that team. And I think it's a lost cause now if you want to defend him in Spain or anywhere, because the damage is done. And when Chiringuito and Pedro Royal is starting like this, it's never a good thing, trust me.
Sid, I guess if you're a Real Madrid fan, the thing you're most upset about is that Hazard himself doesn't look that upset to have just lost a Champions League final. But as you write in the article, that obsessive competitor, it's not really Eden Hazard, is it? It never has been.
No, and up to a point, Real Madrid must have known that. And they would have known that when they signed him. They would have known what kind of player and what kind of person he was. Bear in mind, though, that despite not being an obsessive competitor, despite not being the kind of character, for example, that Cristiano Ronaldo is, for 5 years at Chelsea, he was absolutely fantastic. And so if you get the performances with that same personality, then you accept the personality a little bit more. I think as well, you know, when you look at what happened after the game, I think there's lots of different ways of looking at it. One, of course, is to say that he shouldn't have done it. The other is to say that maybe he shouldn't have done it, even if it's purely from the point of view of window dressing, playing to the gallery. You know, I don't think there's a terrible crime in having friends and being happy to see them and laughing with them, even in the context of having just lost. But of course, you have to know that there are sensitivities. You have to know that this will be picked up, as Jules rightly says. You know that the cameras are on you. And so at that point, I think you have to, if only from the perspective of cynicism and self-protection, you have to know that if you do that, there will be consequences. Now, that's not to say it's right. That's not to say it's not horribly overblown, because it is horribly overblown, but I think it's also fairly predictable.
By the way, there is a title race going on in La Liga. I haven't even gotten to that yet. The top four all facing each other this weekend, separated by just 6 points, but really the top three separated by just 2 points. Saturday, Barcelona hosting Atletico Madrid. They got a 2-point lead, Atleti, over Barca and Real there. And then Sunday, Real Madrid hosting Sevilla. I was going to say, let's stop talking about Eden Hazard, but my next question for you, Sid, is about Eden Hazard. Do you think he indeed does start or play in this game, or could he be held out because of what's happened?
I don't think it gets held up because of what's happened. I think the decision would be based on something other than that. I think if the decision genuinely is Zinedine Zidane's, I think he will probably try to play him. I think he will try and find a place for him in the team. Not least because, of course, he knows that, you know, Jules was talking about the damage that's done, and the damage is done. But one way to fix that, of course, is to go and help Real Madrid now win the league title. And Eden Hazard's contribution has been very, very limited until now. But that would be one way to at least take a step towards making things better from his point of view and from Zidane's point of view as well. So I must confess, I think he probably will start. I also think one of the things that is worth bearing in mind here is that while Hazard has provided a very easy scapegoat, you look at the Real Madrid forward line this year, you look at all of their attacking players, and the only one that you can say is an unqualified success is Benzema. So one of the reasons why Hazard is put back in the team is not just because Zidane really likes him. It's not just because he's a huge signing that cost 160 million euros. It's not because you kind of want to get him fit again, but all of those are factors. One of the main reasons is because actually you look at your squad and you think, well, he's the best of the attackers I've got. Mm.
Jules, Real Madrid, Sevilla, Sunday, who you got?
I've got Real Madrid. I think Sevilla and the defeat and the way they lost against Bilbao last week was very disappointing. And I think Real Madrid have to go for it now. They were so poor, especially for an hour against Chelsea. They just, nothing worked. What Zidane wanted, what the players could do, maybe they were a bit tired. I just think that the tactics were wrong from the start. And now they have to bounce back, find a way of being far more aggressive, far more creative, far more decisive as well in both boxes, defend better, but attack better, not just Benzema on his own. He can't invent goals every single game, you know. So things have to be better structurally for that team and in the way they express themselves together as a collective. So I still think that Real Madrid have that in them and we react after the Chelsea disappointment.
Sid, on Saturday we got Barcelona and Atletico. It's a must-win for Barcelona, has been for quite some time. Is it the same for Atleti or would they be satisfied with a draw?
That's quite a good question. My initial feeling is that they cannot possibly be satisfied with a draw because they would lose control of the league title race if Real Madrid then won on the Sunday night. So I think in that sense they can't possibly be satisfied with it because I think they would then feel that they're vulnerable to Real Madrid coming and taking the title off them. That said, of course, they know that if they were to get a draw, they would at least maintain their advantage over Barcelona. They would then perhaps have some faith in Sevilla to get a result or Real Madrid not to win the final four games. It's a very curious situation because it's not just Atletico Madrid here, it's Barcelona as well. I mean, to listen, for example, to Ronald Koeman, who said, if we win our final four games of the season, we will win the league. But of course, mathematically, that may not be the case. One of the upshots of Atletico Madrid being beaten by Barcelona tomorrow, if indeed that's what happens, would be that it would be Real Madrid who have the league title in their own hands, not Barcelona.
Jules, who needs it more, Diego Simeone or Ronald Koeman?
Well, I think Simeone, who, as we all know, because every year we said the same, still never won at the Camp Nou with Atletico Madrid in, 13 attempts? That's the 14th now. He said today there's always a first. I hope for him that is tomorrow because if they lose this one, I think this is gone. They haven't played well enough in the last few weeks, even if at times. And we saw against Elche in the first half where there was something then with Suarez coming back to the Camp Nou can inspire them. But eventually, they always seem to drop deeper and deeper and almost to get scared to try to go and score a second or try to scare to get a win. And against Elche, they should have never won because if Fidel scored that penalty, it's over and it's a draw. And then I think that then again, that setback probably would have cost them the title. So they're lucky to still be there. So for me, it's a much bigger one for Simeone than it is for Koeman, who, whether they win La Liga or not, I'm still not sure it would be there next season anyway.
All right, Jules, one word. Who you got winning the title?
Atletico Madrid.
Sid, you agree?
No, I don't. But I'm torn between Real Madrid and Barcelona. Real Madrid.
All right, there we go. Plenty more on the La Liga title race coming up on our podcast. You can download it daily if you ever miss an episode of the show. Plenty of bonus material on there, including extra time.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
And here's what the Bundesliga table looks like heading into the weekend. Bayern Munich 7 points clear of all comers. They could clinch the title this weekend. But the big match Saturday, fifth place Dortmund hosting second place RB Leipzig. Dortmund, as you can see, 1 point back of Frankfurt for that last Champions League spot. Archie Rintut joining us. Jan Agafjordtoff still with us. Jan, what's the latest on Erling Haaland? He missed the German Cup semifinal last weekend. Will he be fit for this critical match?
He had a fantastic injury called in German Pferdekuss. That means that it's something, there is a knock on his kind of muscles. He didn't train today, so unfortunately, most likely that he won't play tomorrow. They still hope for a miracle that he will wake up tomorrow and be fit. But for all Dortmund fans, it's most likely that he can't play the game against Leipzig.
Archie, we've been talking about must wins for Dortmund for what feels like almost months. But this is really it, right? This is the make or break game for Dortmund if they are going to make top four.
This is a must win. And then the game after that is a must win. So, yeah, they've got the hardest run in of those three teams who are still looking to clinch a Champions League spot. I mean, Leipzig's not quite there yet, but it's all but done, I think, in terms of the table. The only thing that Leipzig are hoping for is to somehow in what would be an even bigger miracle than Erling Haaland waking up and playing, I think, would be if Leipzig were to still somehow snatch the title off Bayern. But this is huge. Dortmund's run in against Mainz away. We saw how difficult that is for Bayern recently. And then Leverkusen at home. Those are tough games. And I think particularly for RB Leipzig, after what happened in the reverse fixture, and that this is a dress rehearsal for the DFB Cup final next Thursday, there's a lot at stake here. And Leipzig and Julian Nagelsmann will want to prove a point, particularly Nagelsmann, given the fact that he's going to Bayern. And he wants to lay down a marker to your new employers to say that, yeah, Dortmund, no problem.
Jan, we saw how much Dortmund struggled earlier this season without Haaland. Can they get it done Saturday without him?
They did against Holstein Kiel, and they were scoring goals for fun that time. I think that what they miss in these big games is the option, when they have the option to just play him over the back four or back three, whatever Leipzig will be playing. Sometimes when you see Dortmund at their worst, but we're not sure always what kind of team we will see for Dortmund. And sometimes they're playing too many short passes. Yet they're very predictable. Without Haaland, they've got so many offensive players who are more or less the same, the similar players. Also, Bellingham suspended for this game. He has been so good lately. So that is a big blow for them with not playing Haaland in this game. Also for the opposition, when they play Haaland, they have to kind of do something with their team to stop Erling Haaland. And it's, of course, the terrible timing of him in this big game. But the interesting thing, what Archie is saying, is that in the end now, they have so many hard games, Dortmund, with Frankfurt playing the main rival or Mainz in form, still going to Schalke. You never know what will happen there. But Dortmund showed Wolfsburg away a very convincing win against them. So is Dortmund in form, winning, I think it's 4 games in a row now, 5 with Holstein Kiel. So they are on fire, and this is a major, major game for them.
Archie, you mentioned the run-in. Does your gut tell you Dortmund will make top four at the end of the day?
It might be at Wolfsburg's expense, because they've been the team that have been flagging recently. So too, to be honest, of Eintracht Frankfurt, since it was announced that Adi Hütter is off to Borussia Mönchengladbach next season. I'm going to remain on the fence, though, Seth. I don't know. And I still maintain that that's a great thing. I mean, also because I'm not great at predictions. I'll be honest. I think I said on the show the other week in extra time that Liverpool would win the Champions League. So look where that got us. So, yeah. I don't know, and I'm glad I don't, because this is what makes the sport exciting.
Jan, you want to make a pick? You must be torn here between Eintracht Frankfurt and Borussia Dortmund.
I am, man. As an Eintracht Frankfurt fan, I'm not very nervous for this game against Mainz. Everybody knows what expects us there. They have to beat Bo Svensson's very informed team. I'm more nervous for Schalke away. That is would be in the history of Eintracht Frankfurt, these away games against weaker teams, that has been kind of the hurdle that they always fail to come over. But it's going to be interesting because this weekend with the Leipzig game for Dortmund and then a big game between Eintracht Frankfurt and Mainz, there's going to be a lot of deciding moments this weekend in the Bundesliga.
Yeah, Bayern hosting Gladbach with a chance to win the title. Jan, the big story here, some links that we've been hearing. Sources reporting to ESPN that Robert Lewandowski has been linked to not just Chelsea but Manchester City as well, a possible exit from Bayern Munich. What do you make of all this?
Well, I make a lot of things, actually, when I see this, because, first of all, it's a yearly thing that one of his agents, he's changed agents as well, but he's always missed the link. There is no chance in the world that Bayern will let Lewandowski go this summer. But coming into next summer, we'll see what's going on there. And I understand that Lewandowski is very annoyed of all this talk about Haaland coming to Bayern Munich, and Lewandowski just made a check on his body. He's one of the fittest players around, and he's 32, but they realized that his body was like 26 or 27, so he means that he can play on forever, and there is all records to beat. As you see, not only did Gerd Müller won in a season, he's 4 goals away from that one, but he can also, he's like a bit over 90 goals after the all-time Bundesliga record of Gerd Müller. So this man feels he can play forever, and then you have an agent who wants to link him up to any club in the world, but Bayern, there's no chance in the world that they will let the best striker in the world leave the club.
Mm. All right, so Jan says no chance. Archie, do you say any chance?
So I want you to picture the scene, Seb. On the final day of the season, Robert Lewandowski is on 39 goals. It's 89 minutes played against Augsburg. And Kingsley Coman goes through one-on-one against the goalkeeper. And to his side is Robert Lewandowski with a tap-in, okay? Coman elects to not pass the ball. Lewandowski doesn't break the record and is so furious that he moves. That's the only scenario I can imagine where Lewandowski would want to leave Bayern this summer.
Mm. Really?
Yeah, because his dream was always Real Madrid. But that didn't happen. You might remember those tears in the Champions League semi-final when Bayern didn't get through to that final a few years ago. And I think that with that were tears of realization for Lewandowski that that move wasn't going to happen because he didn't come up with the goods in that game. And Chelsea, Manchester City, being honest, I think it's a little step down in terms of the stature even of the two clubs. And I just don't think it's very interesting necessarily for Lewandowski at this time. From what I've been hearing from people in Poland, a move more in the direction of the United States is something that would be interesting. But I think that's some way down the line now for Lewandowski. We're talking about a couple of years now.
I will give you another theory, Seb. So we have Erling Haaland, the most wanted striker in the world at the moment, with Mbappé, with Haaland as well, then, of course. So he won't leave this summer, but maybe he will imagine he will do a pre-arrangement with Bayern for next summer. Okay, what will that mean? Well, he will stay for another season in Dortmund. He can walk out next summer for his clause. Robert Lewandowski play another season for Bayern Munich. He can leave next summer. Only winners in that game, Erling Haaland will get his titles. The only loser is Borussia Dortmund. They will get him to play another season because they would let him go this summer if they get a crazy move. But who in these times can give crazy money out? No one. So just watch out for this one. That may be a theory that maybe can go into practical at some stage soon.
Archie?
I can see that. For the sake of German football, I really hope not. Because if Erling Haaland goes to Bayern, then I think the next 10 titles are going to probably be going to Munich. And for the sake of competition, look, you've seen that at least structurally in German football, it is got an enviable model when it comes to fan power. And you see that right now, the way that English fans, I would say, are looking over the garden fence right now at what Germany has. And that's despite the fact that Bayern have won, let's say, the last nine titles. I think this one's done again this year. So I think that Dortmund would be very happy to push Erling Haaland out of Germany in some way. But I wonder, though, if Robert Lewandowski has his eye not just on Gerd Müller's season record of 40 goals, whether he has an eye on the 365 goals of Gerd Müller. He moved into second place this season ahead of Klaus Fischer. And that is an incredible status there that Gerd Müller already holds. If Lewandowski could break that, I wonder, it would probably take him another 2 years at this rate, might take even less, but that just might be one more thing which creeps into his mind.
Gentlemen, great stuff. Plenty more Bundesliga on ESPN+. Plus, we got 8 games for you across Saturday and Sunday, and on Saturday morning, Dortmund and RB Leipzig also available on ESPN. Dortmund-Leipzig, of course, will meet in the German Cup final as well. That's next Thursday on ESPN2. Next Saturday, it's the FA Cup final. That's on ESPN+. Plus. Of course, Chelsea and Leicester City, all that ahead of the Coppa Italia final on May 19th on ESPN2 featuring Atalanta and Juventus.
We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/FC. Just go to Indeed.com/FC right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on the podcast. Indeed.com/FC, terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
All right, that'll do it for this edition of ESPN FC. Thanks to everyone who joined us. Stevie, as always, a pleasure being with you. Our work, however, not quite done. A little thing we like to call extra time.
All right, good.
Yep. We got Craig.
I like
we got
extra Jan. Time.
We got Stevie, and we got your questions. Stick around. Starts right now. Hey there, everybody. Welcome into this Friday edition of ESPN FC's Extra Time. I couldn't even lure a smile out of you.
That's just a sweet snigger for you, everybody.
Everybody. One more time for me. How does it sound?
Everybody.
You're so bad at the American accent. I love it.
No, that's what you sound like.
Oh, so I'm bad at the American accent.
Oh, absolutely.
That laugh you hear is Jan Agafjordtoff, Craig Burley with us as well. Obviously, Steve Nichol here in studio. Craig, first question for you. Who should Manchester United sign in the summer? Kane, Cristiano Ronaldo, or should they extend Edison Cavani's contract? That was a very serious question to start extra time.
Kane, Ronaldo, or, I think...
He's lost his reading
Cavani's
glasses.
Contract. Sorry?
The reading glasses, you need them.
Oh, I would extend Cavani's contract and sign Kane.
Both? Mm. What do you think, could that work?
Absolutely.
Yeah? A little two up front?
100%. Well, listen, Harry Kane's had a couple of injuries the last couple of years.
Injuries.
So if you could give him a break now and again, how good is it to really play Cavani? Mm,
yeah, not a bad 1A or 1B,
oh,
whatever you want to call it.
Yeah.
Jan, what do you think? Would Ole go for it?
Of course he would go for it. He will try to extend Cavani's contract. I think that is very important for them to have that ready when you start the search for a new player. But you have to ask yourself, what will Harry Kane do? I think he comes to a stage in his career that he would want to win titles. And will you be guaranteed to win titles of Manchester United? I don't think so. I think that is, all that would love to have Harry Kane. Would the Glazers love to have Harry Kane? Because you have to give him money. Maybe they would have bad conscience because of the mystery with the Super League. So maybe this is the time for Ole to give a call and get some £100 million.
Jan Aga Fjortoft, noted Europa League hater. Does the panel think that Tuchel, because he doesn't have a superstar, is better able to manage coach this Chelsea team over his PSG team? Does PSG have to look at their strategy? Also, could Stevie please enact his Dan v. Seb fight again from yesterday's show? let's start
well,
that.
The two of you having a fight.
Right. What was the context of this fight?
Who would want a fight between you two? And I said that the two of you would be like this.
Handbags, nothing but this stuff. Oh. We're the two prettiest members of the ESPN FC family, so the moneymaker really has to be protected. Neither of us can really afford to have that happen. I'm here on my looks.
Listen, you could take a couple of punches and we wouldn't notice.
What's the lightest weight you get at boxing?
Is it feather?
Yeah.
Is it light feather?
Light featherweight sounds about right.
Light feather.
Or feather.
Light feather.
But to the question of the first part of it, we are talking that Thomas Tuchel couldn't handle the stars of PSG. Times he did that. He took them PSG to the Champions League final. And you see Pochettino, he is so good, apparently. And then you looked at PSG this week and they look like frightening chickens running around there, kicking people, trying to get a red card. Is that the way to do stars? I think Tuchel did a great job at PSG as well. So this myth that he can't handle big stars, I think that is a myth.
Mm. Jan, you had Chelsea going through, right? You were like
Absolutely.
The only one.
I did, and I still think they're going to win the Champions League final.
No, he went all serious. I was still thinking about you two fighting.
I know. Yeah, I know.
I was thinking about, you know what, it'd be like Stan Laurel fighting Charlie Chaplin. I mean, what a heavyweight contest.
What a dated reference that is. Is this a 19...
What about Harry Lloyd?
Do you know, hey...
Did you just reference a silent film star?
Yeah.
Hey, Sebi.
Yeah, Craig.
Do you know if YouTube, if they were building a boxing ring for you and Dan, they would have, you could take the top two ropes down, couldn't you? You just have one rope, that's all you'd need.
It's just too easy at this point. It's just too easy. I mean, we need to understand why the viewers want to see us fight so bad. I'm sure there's something.
You could have it in a shoebox.
That's right. That's right.
I'll tell you what, if it was in the telephone box, you think they'd make any contact with each other? Or would we just keep banging the head against the glass when we're done that?
Yeah, we're more talkers than fighters. Atanu asks.
Yeah, but you're not very good at that either.
Oh, thank you. Thank you, Craig. I appreciate your candor, as always, here on Extra Time.
Well, last week you asked me where would Erling Haaland fit in?
You're right.
That's straight in the top 10 of stupidest question of the year.
Right. In the ESPN FC show host rankings, I'm plummeting. Plummeting. There's not that many options.
I don't think you've got anywhere to plummet to.
I'm at the bottom.
I think you've reached the bottom of the list.
Right, well, you're right. Well, there's some safety there in not being able to be relegated. Should Arteta have taken a similar managerial route to that of Lampard? Start from a lesser club, learn the trade, and then make the big move. I guess the obvious...
He started from a lesser club. He started as a lesser club. It's called Arsenal FC. I mean, I'm so sick of this, that Arteta, you're having a go at Ole Gunnar Solskjaer all the time. When do you start with Arteta? Craig, give it to me.
No, I agree, but my argument would be, and we haven't got the energy for the argument, is that Arsenal's expectations, you're absolutely right though, but Arsenal's expectations, as you well know, Jan, are not the same as Manchester United.
Exactly.
But you're absolutely right.
Fortunately.
He should. What's the criteria? You know, in all fairness to Solskjaer, he's managed a few clubs at least, and he's got, what, probably a decade of experience at least in management. You know, this thought that all Guardiola's mates and anybody who's worked in and around them are all of a sudden capable of, you know, managing these big clubs, albeit one that, you know, and it's not just Arteta's fault, because Unai Emery is not a bad manager and he struggled at Arsenal too. They've just left, Arsenal have left the rot too long at the end of the Wenger era. There's been too many bad decisions there, and Arteta is struggling big time. And, you know, I think it could be, I don't know. I don't know what the boys think, but, you know, obviously we'll see this season out, and but it depends how they start next season, how long he'll last. I don't think it'll be very long.
And it's very sad to see Arsenal the state they are in now. I mean, when I came to England, it's a long time ago, but Arsenal is a big, big football club. And there are people, I won't say in and around the club, I would say around the club, who have just let them walk, and you call it rot. They have rotten Arsenal, and the expectations they have at the moment is unbelievable. Remember back in the times when Wenger said to come, we'll be top four, is a trophy for this club. And I even saw today that someone said I should bring Wenger back at the club. But I agree with this Arteta thing. I like Arteta. He took a trophy there and everything. But it's not enough to sit next to Pep Guardiola to be a top manager. We have learned that, haven't we?
Do you know what else, guys? It doesn't wash with football fans who've got a brain when you come out and say to the press after the game, well, we gave that everything we had. What? Sorry? If that was everything that you had and your team had, you might as well pack the suitcase now and leave. Because that's just nonsense. We gave it everything we had. They were rotten.
It's amazing the difference in the two London clubs, Chelsea and Arsenal. Because there's no question that Arteta is still hanging on because he's Arteta, because of his connections with the club. And he's basically, in two seasons, yes, he's won the FA Cup, but for the first time in, what, 20-something years, they're not qualified for a European place.
Right.
But it's okay. And they're ninth in the Premier League, but it seems to be okay. Whereas you've got Chelsea with Frank, who had a fantastic first year under the circumstances, spent some money, started brilliantly, had a what, 12 game horrible run, and got the sack. And it had nothing to do with his connections with Chelsea. It's just a different run club completely.
You are saying here, effectively, you're giving Chelsea credit for being impatient. But am I fair to say that on the show before, you've said they should have been more patient with Lampard?
I'm not saying that. I'm just saying that one club dithers
moved
around.
On from a legend.
One club dithers around, stuttering from one decision to another, whereas Chelsea are decisive. Now, you can argue whether the decisions are right or wrong, but they don't mess around. They don't chew their nails for 12 months, they make a decision, and when it's done, they move on.
Is now the decision time for Arsenal then? Kind of sounds like what you're saying.
Do you think Arsenal's going to make a decision?
If you were in charge.
We don't know.
Is now the time?
If it was the other way around and we were talking about Chelsea, we would say, oh yeah, they're making a decision. Yeah. The fact that you're saying, do you think they will, proves my point.
But I think, that it's interesting to see also the timing of sacking of Lampard is also when is the right manager available. And I think that there was a feeling that Tuchel got fired at PSG, but still I guess Chelsea is a very well run club. They knew about what was going on. So I also get a feeling that Thomas Tuchel at the end, before he was fired, he knew that the manager position at Chelsea could be available, and then you bring in Thomas Tuchel. So should Arsenal fire Arteta? Well, I haven't seen them approve for 6, 7, 8 months, the club. But it's also what kind of managers are available. And it's not only just to put a manager there. You have to have a plan where you want the club to go. And I agree with Stevie in terms of how the clubs are run, because Chelsea kills everybody saying that continuity is so important at the club. They keep on firing managers, and they keep on winning trophies. That is Chelsea for you. That's what Abramovich has done, and, well, he's been successful doing that.
All right, next question, guys. Let's move it along. What is the impact of playing with a good captain? Who is the best modern captain at the moment, and who is the best captain that you have had? Let's start on just the first line of that. What is the impact of playing with a good captain? Because I never know if the captaincy matters or not.
Well, I'll tell you my first experience of looking at somebody and saying, that's a captain, and you know what, I'm going with that guy, was 1984 European Cup final, Champions League final in Roma, in Rome, against Roma at their place. Before the game, we go out, go to our fans, I give them a wave, they're all clapping, singing the whole thing, and we turn around and we get to the halfway line as we're walking back towards the dressing room, and our captain, Graham Souness, went, why don't we get down and wind them up? And they're like, what do you mean? He goes, come on, let's go. So we all troop down to their penalty area, and we're standing, he's standing right up the front.
Before the final?
Aye, before the game, aye. There's probably about 45,000 Roma fans, and he's standing there and he starts waving, so we all started waving and clapping and all that, and they were going mental. And he had the biggest grin in his face, and I'm like, tell you what, I'm playing for this, I'm playing with this guy.
Yeah. Craig, the value of the captain.
I think respect. From the other players, like Stevie said, I mean, Liverpool players would have hugely respected Graham Souness for, because he led from the front. I mean, he never shirked anything, Souness. I mean, he was a dirty so-and-so as a player, but he was all in, wasn't he? So I think that, you know, probably when I was playing for Scotland with Gary McAllister, when Macker was captain of Scotland before he missed the World Cup because he got a cruciate injury, but he was... he was a good guy to follow. He was a different mould to Souness. He didn't have that nasty streak, but he was a quieter guy. But yeah, you just got to respect your captain. And you know, I don't know about the boys. I'm sure Stevie are that captain. But, you know, for a period at Celtic, I was the captain and the same at Derby. But, they, you know, difficult circumstances when you're fighting relegation, you're trying to drag everybody along. So different type of pressure. I don't know, you know, people like Vincent Kompany and Roy Keane at United were guys that, you know, people would follow, and, you know, John Terry at Chelsea, just thinking about a few names, were guys who led from what they did on the field, and everybody else sort of just got in line behind and followed along.
Well, it is Friday, which means we should end the week on a positive note. That's what the producers and the folks on Twitter have asked, which is why we're going to end with this question. Will Craig finally give Ole Gunnar Solskjaer the respect after lifting the Europa League trophy?
Oh, well, absolute no.
Well, this is a moot point because Manchester United have recently lifted that trophy and finished second in the league in the same season. So, look, they are... as they did back then, they are doing what they have to do. They're playing okay. But I'm only judging Man United when really fighting with Liverpool and City for the Premier League title. And if they spend money this summer and bring in some of the players we've talked about, maybe Solskjaer will have a better, you know, a better go at it. If he gets Harry Kane or player of that ilk, maybe they will be able to mount a serious challenge. But that's where I'm sort of putting Man United at the moment, and it doesn't matter who's managing them. It's like Solskjaer, or if they brought in Pochettino and it was a Europa League, it's all about winning titles for me when you're at clubs that size. So that's not changing.
You know when I said
no.
I'm assuming that's a Man United fan. You talk about trying to jinx yourself.
Yeah. Can't say
no.
I would be saying the same thing, no matter who was manager of Man United, not if it was Ole Gunnar Solskjaer or anybody else. That this club needs to be, and I know the squad needs some. I know they need to rejig the squad about, and I understand that. But I'm basing my judgment on this club against Liverpool and City as the two teams that have set the standard recently, and Mourinho came in, wasn't able to do it. You know, Van Gaal before it wasn't able to do it. Solskjaer at the moment has done enough that he'll get another run at it next year for sure. But somebody at some point is going to have to take United back to where Sir Alex Ferguson had them. And maybe he'll be that man. We'll see.
Last word, quick word, Jan.
Yeah, I'm just saying that. I think what you should give him compliment for, Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, the Europa League, is not the the biggest trophy that Manchester United could or should win. I think, or we should give him compliment for, now you can see how he wants his team to play football. And the result will then be the consequences of that. Manchester United, who have the standard of being top two, was not good enough to be number two in the league. But you have to come back, and now we'll have another run. But you need to have a good transfer market to make them into a title contender. That's the only thing, the standard that Manchester United got to have as a club and as the size of that big club.
All right, gentlemen.
Yeah, I think just quickly, I think if and this is a big if because of the budgets, because of the pandemic. We don't know what clubs are going to spend or not going to spend. But if United deliver him a couple of key players, Harry Kane, Erling Haaland, throw some names out there, then the pressure will crank up on Solskjaer for sure, because if those players are delivered and he's still off the pace, then I think that'll be it for him. If they don't give him those players, I think he can always use that, and maybe rightly so, as a reason to say, well, listen, you're not giving me just quite enough. But if they do buy some big guns in the summer, yeah, it's going to be great for them, but it's also going to crank up the pressure on him to bridge that gap.
All right, gentlemen, that's it for today's edition of Extra Time.
Is that
beautiful.
Positive?
It was wonderful, eloquent, very upbeat for all our Manchester United fan viewers. All right, that's it for more MUTV. Check out ESPN FC 7 days a week with Craig Burley.